A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch.
The lights probably gone.
So had the stairs.
You are just number six.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 454. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are continuing our discussion about Quatermass at the Movies. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. Yes, this is one of our spin-off episodes, which come up just about once a year, and we follow one of the TV shows that we've covered into another medium. And here we are with one of our favourite subjects, Professor Quatermass himself, and looking at the Hammer big screen adaptations of the three original TV serials. And we're going to mention another film that was almost a Quatermass as well. As you said last time, Brian, we're not doing the film release of the 1979 Quatermass, The Conclusion. You touched on that with Xander back in episode 7 and 8.
Yeah, that was mostly a shorter version of that TV production, so we're not going to get into that.
Okay, but instead,
Quatermass and the Pit was from 1967, known in the US as 5 Million Miles to Earth. And this time we are in color and in widescreen. And it is a big difference from the original Quatermass and the Pit that was broadcast on BBC television. The serial ran in December of 1958, running into January of 1959, and it was a huge hit, peaking at 11 million viewers for the final episode. And once again, Hammer bought the film rights before the broadcast even happened, and Nigel Neal wrote a screenplay for the film in 1961. But the production was delayed, partly because Hammer was having such big successes with the gothic horror films that were being done in full color. And, you know, Hammer was doing other things now.
Hammer was a very successful horror movie studio at this point. But they'd also, last time we talked about United Artists and their Quatermass relationship with Hammer. By this time, Hammer had formed a new distribution deal, this time with Columbia Pictures in 1957. And Columbia weren't that interested in Quatermass. They were more interested in the gothic horrors. And they couldn't agree any financing that Hammer would need to make the third Quatermass movie. But this change in 1966, Hammer get this time a new distribution deal. This time it's Seven Arts and 20th Century Fox. And finally, the long-awaited third Quatermass movie, Quatermass in the Pit, gets the green light. And it goes into production, Brian. And of course, we have to talk about who's going to play Professor Quatermass himself this time. And not surprising, Nigel Neal had lobbied for it to be the Quatermass from the third serial, André Morel. How would that have been, Brian?
That would have been something, because André Morel was excellent in that role.
Sadly, I think Morel turned it down. So Andrew Keir comes in to play Bernard Quatermass. He will go on to play Quatermass again, but on audio, I think, Brian.
Yes, there was a radio broadcast called the Quatermass Memoirs that featured Andrew Keir in the role. And Val Guest had been slated to direct once again, but he was busy doing Casino Royale. This was the 1967 James Bond parody, of all things. So Roy Ward Baker took over as director. This was a director who had worked on The Avengers, or was working on it at about that time.
Very capable pair of hands, somebody we know from The Avengers, very good.
The film also stars notable Hammer actors James Donald as Dr. Roney, and Barbara Shelley as his assistant. So some well-known people there. And in a great piece of casting, they had Julian Glover as Colonel Breen, who is a sort of antagonist, not exactly the antagonist, but an antagonistic character in the film. Duncan Lamont, who had played Caroon in the BBC version of the Quatermass Experiment, the original Quatermass production, had a minor role as a drill operator. So you had some interesting faces showing up. Even Gareth Thomas, years before Blake 7, showed up as a machine operator as well.
Fantastic cast on this one, I'll just say, Brian. Those names you mentioned, all great.
Yes, and Hammer had expanded its operations this time, and they were filming at Elstree by then, which was an upgrade. And speaking of upgrades, they had a budget of £275,000 at this point. So that's a long ways from the original £42,000 of that first film, although this, of course, was many years later. Quatermass and the Pit was released on November 9th, 1967 in the UK, and it was another UK box office hit.
And of course, it was released in the US, where it was known as 5 Million Miles to Earth. Sadly, didn't seem to perform quite so well as expected in the US. In particular, 20th Century Fox felt it needed to make $1.2 million to break even. I confess, Brian, I never understand film economics, but sadly, they considered it a flop in the US. I'm going to say that 10 years after, probably Americans had sort of, if they'd ever known about Quatermass, they'd sort of completely forgotten by then, whereas in the UK, of course, Quatermass was still a household name.
Yeah, well, those different names of the films without the name Quatermass in the American ones, that's a significant thing, because Quatermass in the UK became a real brand before we talked about branding in the same way we do now, but it was a very well-known thing right from that original serial in 1953. It became a very well-known property, and still was in 1967, and I'm sure people remembered that original serial, or you know, younger folks had been told about the original Quatermass in the Pit by their parents, and you know, you couldn't see those again. So having a film version, it meant a new chance to see this story.
It's interesting stuff.
Yeah, film and television had very different roles then compared to how they are now. They're more similar now than they were decades ago.
Yeah, this is true. Okay, now we've alluded several times in the last episode and this episode to another film that was almost a Quatermass film for Hammer. This is, of course, X the Unknown from 1956 in black and white. And very quickly, the story is here that it was 1956. Hammer obviously had had this huge hit with the Quatermass Experiment the previous year and wanted a quick sequel. So they hired one of their regulars, Jimmy Sangster, a very well-known Hammer writer, to come up with a completely new Quatermass story about a group of soldiers investigating a radioactive monster, and then they need their scientific advisor to advise them. And it was sort of all go to be a sequel, I think, Brian.
Yes, that's right. But not surprisingly, Nigel Neal did not give them permission to use the character. Nigel Neal, throughout his life, and he lived a long time after Quatermass was introduced, he was always very protective of that character and didn't want anyone else to write Quatermass stories. So the script was modified, the character became Dr. Royston from the Atomic Energy Lab instead of the British Experimental Rocket Group or the British Rocket Group. And for Royston, they cast the American actor Dean Jagger.
And I'll just do a few other quick casting notes, Brian, to say that the film also features Leah McKern, who of course was one of the number twos in The Prisoner. Michael Ripper, who you might be familiar with Paul Cornell describing as the man or him with the eye, who's in nearly all the Hammer movies and actually played the barman in Quatermass 2 on screen. And there's a child actor, there's a very young Fraser Hines is in this movie, Brian.
Yes, Fraser Hines, it seems, has been acting forever. He was in lots of things as a child. X the Unknown was released in the UK on November 5th, 1956, and it was a moderate success in the UK and in the US. I think the lack of the Quatermass name probably did make a difference in the UK.
And I will say I've watched it, and it's quite fun. It's black and white, it's Hammer, it's got a radioactive monster. It's available streaming over here at the moment. I think it's still free to stream over here at the moment, so it is actually quite fun. It's not a Quatermass movie, but it almost was in a way.
Very nice. So we should get into some of our own thoughts about this, and I think we'll go film by film. So the Quatermass Experiment from 1955. Eamon, what did you think about it?
So I'm going to say that I like all the films, but I'm going to say the Quatermass Experiment is a great start. It's particularly notable. I think there's one obvious thing about the film that is outstandingly good, and that is Richard Wordsworth in an almost silent performance as the slowly mutating astronaut Caroon. People often mention it in the same breath as Boris Karloff in the original Universal Frankenstein. It's a great performance, I think, Brian.
Yes, that was a good performance. And there are some nice visuals in this one, too, with the visual of the crashed spaceship where the astronauts were going to be retrieved. Nice visuals there, I thought.
And looks fantastic, that sequence, I think, with the rocket in the Earth and all the people arriving and milling around. It looks great.
Yeah, I'm going to say that this film, it was all right, it was entertaining, but it doesn't feel as Quatermassy or as interesting as I want it to be.
How much of that is down to Brian Donlevy himself as Professor Quatermass for you, Brian?
That is part of it. We know that Brian Donlevy was Nigel Neal's least favorite actor in the role. I think I agree with Nigel on this point. That was part of it because we have much less a scientist and much more a sort of tough guy authority figure. It was partly in the script, I think, as well as the performance. I think the ending they did on this was a mistake and it made it much less interesting than the original ending that Nigel Neal wrote for television.
Yes, there is obviously much less content in the film versions. Stuff gets cut out and it becomes a sort of just science fiction monster horror film in a way, and the ending is not as impressive as was on the original television or the 2005 version. But it sort of barrels along quite nicely. It's quite fun for Hammer. It's notable because it pretty much launches Hammer as a horror studio, Brian, which I think is fascinating.
And they were making, you know, 1950s monster movies, where what Nigel Neal was doing and what the BBC were doing, they were making more cerebral science fiction serials. It was a different thing they were doing. And I think the result of the Hammer films, I think they're fine. I think they're entertaining, but they lose something. And with the ending we have in the Hammer Quatermass Experiment, we have a sort of zapping the monster with electricity and winning that way, as opposed to this emotional appeal to the person who had been taken over and, you know, starting to get into questions of humanity and are you still human after something like this has happened and so on. So it's a very different thing, and because of that, this feels to me sort of more okay and entertaining rather than the strong piece of work that the BBC was giving us.
Very interesting. That's a good way of putting it, I think, Brian. Well, we can almost link these two films together. So I'm going to throw to you now and suggest, what about Quatermass 2 from 1957? What did you like about that one?
Yeah, so I like this one a little better, in part because the themes that were in the original Quatermass 2 are a better fit for what Hammer was doing. And Quatermass 2 in either version is sometimes called the British invasion of the body snatchers, because this was like a taking people over body snatcher movie, very much fitting into the 1950s theme of that. And while it was a more cerebral take, I think, on the BBC version, more of those interesting thematic things made it in. So I prefer this to the first one, but nevertheless, I am going to say this is a fun, entertaining monster movie, but it still doesn't have as much of the cerebral Quatermass feel that I want to see in a Quatermass film.
For Quatermass 2, I enjoyed some of the exterior shooting, particularly when they're at the Shell petrol processing or whatever facility, and we get that great scene of the MP that has sort of sneaked Quatermass onto the tour, the MP coming out of the tank covered in the terrible corrosive black slime. That is very well done, actually, I thought. Very memorable moment, quite horrifying.
Yes, some of those things were shot very well in it, for sure.
I'm sort of coming back to Brian Dyne Levy again, Brian. I think I know the answer to this one already, but does he seem like much of a scientist, this version of Quatermass?
Not really. Again, he's sort of a tough guy authority figure. He seems to have a great deal of authority in the government over these programs, and I don't really understand why, where in the British one, the idea of the British Experimental Rocket Group, and then it was called the British Rocket Group, we had a better sense of what that group was and what Quatermass's role in it was and why he was the person in charge and why he had this sense of knowledge and authority as a scientist.
Yeah, it's a challenging problem with the first two films, I think, is Brian Dunleavy, even though the stories about him are quite fun and interesting, and he doesn't sound to have been that terrible a character himself, despite problems with alcohol and so on. But anyway, yeah, that's the first two films. We're going to switch to full colour, Brian, and jump forward 10 years and do Quatermass and the Pit from Hammer. What about this one?
So this is a completely different thing from the earlier ones. And at this point, they were doing something a lot more like what the BBC had done with Quatermass in general and Quatermass in the Pit. And I have to say, I enjoyed this film a lot. I think they captured a lot of what the BBC had done. They still, in some respects, it was not quite where the BBC did it. I think I do prefer the BBC version, but this is a full-color widescreen film. It's a little shorter, but not as short as the other ones. It has some great casting, and this was one that I really enjoyed.
Me too. I had a great time at Quatermass in the Pit again. It's always been one of my favorites from Hammer from this period. I think the performances in it are great. Keir, Donald, Shelley. And we get a shout out for British Invaders favourite and regular Julian Glover. It looks great in colour. It's Hammer colour. It perhaps doesn't have, again, that sort of cerebral, thoughtful process that we see Quatermass and his team applying in the TV version. It's all sped up a little bit and hammered up a bit for the film version, but it's great fun, this film. It's, you know, it's really 1967 Hammer horror, bright colours. It's great. It just barrels along and it's great fun, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. It doesn't spend as much time on some things, and the sort of final explanation and the big sort of reveal at the end, I think, is done better in the BBC version. But we get a really nice, compelling film. It really does feel like Quatermass. I think Andrew Keir is a very good Quatermass. Julian Glover was the perfect casting for Colonel Breen. This military figure who wants to do the right thing and wants to be on side with Quatermass, but just doesn't understand all of these strange things that are happening and doesn't understand the scientific perspective, just can't be there and believe what's going on. So he feels like sort of the opposite version of the Brigadier from Doctor Who, where Doctor Who gave us the military character who completely bought into all of these science fictional things that were happening, and here we have the military character who just doesn't. And I think Julian Glover did a wonderful job with that role.
He's the opposite of the Brigadier, of course. Yes, of course he is. Brilliant. Okay, I just quickly noticed that there are a couple of special effects of the alien bodies, which I think are slightly better done in the TV version, but I think partly that is Brian, lower screen resolution and quality and slightly creepier in the original black and white, possibly.
Yes, but black and white makes a difference for sure.
It does, yeah.
I will also note, and this is an odd little point, but I'll make it anyway. In the Hammer version of Quatermass and the Pit, there isn't really a pit.
No.
In the original, they find this object that is below a new housing development buried in the ground. So it's a pit that's been dug to reveal this. And in the Hammer version, it's in a tube station. It's in a subway station. And they're going out sideways, you know, digging in the wall to expand this tube station. I guess Quatermass in the tube station doesn't have quite the same ring, but I did notice that the pit doesn't quite figure in the same way.
That is interesting as well, actually. These things that did that, they had to be sacrificed to make it to the big screen. Quick shout out for X the Unknown from 1956, black and white Hammer science fiction horror film with an interesting cast, and it's quite fun. It's not great, but it's fun, and I enjoyed it, and I enjoyed the cast.
Okay, very nice.
So, do you want to answer the question, Brian? Who is your favorite Professor Quatermass on screen?
Oh, interesting. I think it has to be Andre Morel from the original BBC Quatermass and the Pit. Andrew Keir was also very good, and the earlier BBC ones, Reginald Tate and John Robinson, are fine. They're okay in the role. They don't stand out as being memorable very much. But my favorite has to be Andre Morel, and I think Brian Donlevy does have to come in last for me.
Yes. I think we've done this before, and I think we were on Andre Morel last time as well, but now having watched the film versions, he's still at number one. I think I've only ever seen Andre Morel in about three things, but they're all great. And we have talked about two of them here on this show.
Yeah.
Fantastic actor, and how lovely it would have been perhaps to have him on the big screen as well, but he passed on this project. You mentioned off air that there's three versions of the Quatermass experiment now on screen.
Yeah, so this is another interesting question, is what is your preferred version of the Quatermass experiment? Because the original BBC one is mostly missing. We have the first two episodes, and the other four were never recorded. They were performed live to camera for broadcast and never committed to film. So we don't have that original one to look at. What we do have to look at is the Brian Donlevy Hammer version, and also the 2005 BBC remake that stars Jason Fleming. And in other media, there is the Quatermass Memoirs, which sort of covers, you know, talking about it, covers some of the Quatermass experiment. And there is also a script book floating around that I imagine you can still find if you're looking for it, to read the original script. So I don't know if there is a good answer for how you want to experience the Quatermass experiment, but what's your preference, Haven?
I think this is great, Brian. I think if we're just talking about screen versions, then the Hammer film, for all of its fun and its significance in Hammer history, is probably still in last place. Which brings us to the original, or the 2005. If the original had survived intact, or had been recorded, as it were, then I suspect I would be picking the original because I love those creepy black and whites from the 1950s. But I'm actually going to say the 2005 Jason Fleming version, partly because of some of the stories we know that go around BBC's attempt to redo this and to do it live to air like the original, which was a interesting challenge, hadn't been done for quite some time at that point. So I'm going to pick 2005. What about yourself, Brian?
Yeah, I think certainly as a screen version, also have to go with 2005. I don't know what I would feel if we had the rest of the original one, because if you look at those two episodes, the recordings are very beat up and poor quality, and the production at that point was very limited. So I do enjoy the 2005 one. It is not quite a replacement, but it is a good way of capturing that story. I also do like the audio BBC radio production, the Quatermass Memoirs with Andrew Keir, which has a nice, if brief, take on the Quatermass experiment as well, with some clips from the original couple of episodes with Reginald Tate, and also Andrew Keir talking about it in the role.
Okay, that's nice as well. Very good.
We should get to our recommendations.
We should, yes.
So, Eamon, would you like to start on this? What are your recommendations for the Quatermass Hammer films?
For the three Quatermass Hammer films, they are available free on streaming as I record over here in the UK. So I would say watch them all. I would say particularly Quatermass and the Pit is a solid gold recommendation, the 1967 colour film. And actually for that one, I'm going to suggest you splash out on a wonderful Blu-ray, which I have, packed with all the extra features and interviews and so on. Lots of information about the history of Quatermass. So, solid recommendation from me, particularly for Quatermass and the Pit, and particularly the Blu-ray, which I'm hanging on to, Brian. I'm keeping this one. What about yourself, if we go across the pond? What are you going to say about the three Hammer versions?
Okay, so I am going to give a strong recommendation for Quatermass and the Pit. It is a lovely film, and it does a nice take on the character of Quatermass and on the tone of Quatermass, you know, that franchise and genre. It's a wonderful film and really nice to have a big widescreen color take on that, as you say, available on Blu-ray and so on. For the first two, I am going to give a more cautious recommendation. I love Quatermass, and yes, I would say these are worth looking at, but don't make them the first Quatermass that you see. If you can watch the BBC 2005 Quatermass experiment, or the 1950s Quatermass 2, even the radio Quatermass Memoirs, watch some of those things first, and then come to the Brian Donlevy films. And if you're really only watching the Hammer ones, I would say watch Quatermass and the Pit first, even though it came last. But yeah, those first two, cautious recommendation, but go to other Quatermass things first.
Okay. And if you'd like to chime in and give us your own particular favourite brands of Quatermass, either the actors or the various different versions, then please drop by the Facebook group and let us know.
Absolutely. It's a small number of stories, but a number of different takes on some of those stories. So absolutely, it would be lovely to to hear about your thoughts. And if anyone watched the Quatermass experiment on the original broadcast in 1953, I would absolutely love to hear your thoughts about that.
Absolutely. Great stuff.
So, in summary, Nigel Neal and the BBC brought us Professor Quatermass and the British Experimental Rocket Group back in the 50s, and gave us a few stories that were delving into all sorts of interesting matters about humanity and the stories that we tell and so on. And when Hammer Films adapted them for film and for these horror films, we had a couple of films in the 50s that brought us sort of monster movie versions, where we got the Quatermass experiment looking at what happened to this astronaut returning from space, and Quatermass 2 looking at taking over people, body snatcher type ideas. And then many years later in the 60s, we had Quatermass and the Pit, which gave us something much more similar to the BBC's take on Quatermass and the BBC story Quatermass and the Pit, with a more scientist-like character and a lovely full-color take on that story and all of its interesting messages and conclusions that we get in it.
Great stuff. More fascinating content about Professor Bernard Quatermass and his various adventures.
Always great fun to look into that.
So please come back and join us next time. We're going back to television, but it's an unusual one for us, which we'll explain about in more detail next time. We are looking at a show from 1990. It's James Burke's After the Warming. And there's going to be quite a lot to talk about when we come back.
There certainly will be. And it'll be a chance to be a little more political and to get into some different ideas than what we usually do, which should make for some interesting episodes there. Until then, you can find all of our episodes at BritishInvaders.com, including our original Quatermass discussion, a couple of episodes there, and a couple of anniversary episodes relating to Quatermass. And if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find our group there. Join in on some of the discussions. Tell us what you think about all of these versions of Quatermass. And if you go to Instagram and Threads, you can follow us there. We are at British_Invaders_podcast. On both of those platforms.
Great stuff. Do come along to one of those platforms and tell us what you think about Quatermass at the movies. And please come along to VogueNetwork.com, where you'll find the Voice of Geeks, where you'll get podcasts, you'll get gaming content, you'll get live streaming, you'll get various reviews and so on. Lots of activity as part of the Voice of Geeks at VogueNetwork.com.
Absolutely. So thank you for listening. And this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you very much. Until next time, Eamon in England reminding you that we are the Martians.